Hi, and welcome to, well, partially Source Drunk episode 38, recorded on the 10th of July 2008. This podcast will try to show the listeners the more practical examples of open source and free software. And today we'll not do this by taking random open source software, but we'll discuss something completely else.
Hi, this is Frank Grave from the Neat Little Mac Apps podcast, and to all you Neat Little Mac Apps lovers out there, don't worry, this is a very special edition. I have no idea with which episode this will be, but anyway, I'll hope you all like this show.
And traditionally, with this episode, we'll be drinking two beers.
Ah, yes, I forgot to mention that. The host on my left here is Dimitri Larmizo. You might know him from a show we did earlier on, the System Trash podcast that has pod faded. Don't worry, don't try and look it up. But he always starts his show with a good beer review. And so I just tag along with that one because I kind of like the idea of that.
And on my right is Frank de Grave from Neat Little Mac Apps, who doesn't drink beer before he starts his shows, but guzzles red wine just to get in the mood before he records.
Good red wine, that is.
Okay, what do you have?
Oh, by the way, should we give them a little scene, environmental?
Yeah, so go ahead. Be my guest.
Just for all of you, this shows our commitment to podcasting. I mean, this really is the top of the devotion of podcast hosts. We are now on our holiday. We're in the middle of...
South of France.
In a beautiful environment. You can hear the crickets mucking about behind us here. And it's evening. And I have in front of me a very nice cold Belgian beer.
Yep.
But it's brewed in France.
It's brewed in France, near Montélimar, which is near Lyon. And, well, to make a very long story short, last year we dined in a little French restaurant and I saw that they had beers. Not a lot, but they had really nice markets.
Oh, so you come here every year?
Not every year, but most of the time.
Capitalistic high society, Belgium member of...
It's a small house with a very small pool.
Okay.
And I tried a beer, and the beer was just splendid. And normally, the French beer, excuse me for everyone who is...
excuse me for my French.
Excuse me for never mind. Okay. Excuse me for everyone who is French and listening to this. The French beers aren't the best in the world, in my opinion.
I tried. We're Belgium, we can say that.
Yes, we're pretty nationalistic about it. But to make it even shorter, I liked the beer. And I asked the owner of the restaurant which beer it was, where it came from. And she said, well, it just comes from 5 kilometers from here. It's a little brewery. And he knows what he's doing because he's a Belgian. And so here in France, drinking Belgian beer, which is French. And what do you have?
I have the Marcus Ambré. And I have no idea.
You've never done this before. What?
No, I already picked a bit on the label, so it's fermented in the bottle. It says. I don't know which kind of beer.
It's an amber beer.
Okay, it's the amber version.
It's like, it's not too strong.
Which versions does he have?
4 versions. He has a amber version, a blonde version, a blanche, which is a white beer, and also a brune, a brown beer, which I'm having.
And this is the amber one.
This is the amber one. It's the most strongest one. It's the 5.8% alcohol. Here you go. The opener. We're drinking them in nice... foams out of the bottle.
Thanks for mentioning that beforehand.
Sorry about the trousers. And I will be opening my Brune. For all you people who are anxious in getting some information about software, we'll be getting there. Mind you, we're on a holiday, so we'll take our time. You can skip ahead if you want to. Just pouring in the brown one?
Without ruining your trousers.
Without ruining my trousers. Nice. See, that's the difference.
Hey, you've been doing this 38 shows in a row. I mean, give me a break.
I'm really sorry about that. Well, yeah, no taste problem. It.
Okay, let's try this.
You go ahead. That's 10 seconds to taste. I don't take 10 seconds to taste. People will just stop listening now.
I never drank something like this. I'm not saying it's bad, I mean it's good. It really has this... Wait up. This is good stuff.
Okay.
Difficult to describe though. Because normally I don't even drink amber kinds of
it's
beer.
It's very particular beer. It's like it's made from honey, but it's not made from honey. It's pretty, pretty good natural beer. You don't have any colorants. No, it isn't made from wheat. I'll look it up from what it is made of. But it is really, really nice to drink in this hot evening, night.
By the way, if you hear some noise in the background, they are actually... how should I put it in English?
Farmers who are at this moment in harvesting their crops, and it's completely black outside. It is pitch
it's
dark.
Midnight.
It's midnight. What so yeah, they work 24 hours a day to have the crop harvested as soon as possible. Mm. Okay.
This is good beer.
This is very good beer. Let's...
Yeah, sure. Let's hop into some software. We're not going to do a review, actually, so if you're really looking for a review, I think it would be best to just skip this episode and go to the next one whenever it comes out. What we're going to do now is have a general discussion, because we have some history, me and Dimitri, and we like to discuss the mainly open source versus me, Mac Freaky, Apple software, and we always have some interesting discussions I found. So I follow your podcast. I hope you follow mine. But anyway, my question to you this evening is, from your point of view, open source, where is it at this moment? Where is it heading to? What do you think of open source at this time?
And now I think 50% of my listeners have just stopped listening, because that is a very, very, very general question. And it's a very difficult one to answer. And
how come have they stopped listening?
Because
they're all open source bigots. No?
Well, in my opinion, there is no one answer, or there's not one opinion about what is good about open source software or where open source software is heading. It's really, really difficult, and mostly you don't want to venture in that discussion. But since we're here on a holiday, we don't care.
No.
We just will have that discussion.
Yeah. I mean, for instance, you have the whole Google thing going on with what's its name again?
Android. Yeah.
I mean, open source discussions have been tens of years. Everybody was talking about, oh, we're going to take over Microsoft. Open source is better and blah, blah, blah. And lately you actually see stuff coming out with true open source implementations. Thinking about Android, that will be coming out very soon. And for instance, you have, I've seen TV recording stuff, hard drive that record TV stuff, all Linux driven stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was really close of buying such a thing, even.
Well,
but still, I mean, where do you see...
Well, I'll just answer it from the viewpoint of a user, a personal user, and a user who works for a company who uses server software, desktop software, and so on. I've been following the open source community for, I think, 8 or 7 years, pretty closely. As I said, for personal reasons and professional reasons. And in my opinion, it is really growing. And not only growing, companies are really, really practically using open source software and are getting the idea behind it. 5 years ago, most companies that would use software, service software and desktop software, would see open source as a nice gimmick, as something that is free, something that they can try out and is not supported. This has changed enormously. Open source is really looked at from another angle. IT managers are really beginning to see that open source can mean a lot to them and is something that they can rely on, something that they can get support on, something they can point to if something goes terribly wrong and save their jobs.
Is it also because I've noticed that some things go in reverse? I mean, for instance, you have Sun, Oracle, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't they open sourcing their proprietary stuff going in the other direction then?
Some companies are, because they are, in my opinion as well, and only in my opinion, just some people may disagree, they are opening a lot of their software because they feel that they have no other option. Look at Sun. Sun has been working with open source projects for a long time. They are the base for OpenOffice, for example. Mm-hmm. And now they are really, really going further than that. They made OpenSolaris. They opened their Solaris operating system. They bought MySQL, for mm-hmm. example, which is a huge, huge, huge move.
That was one of my trains of thought, mm-hmm. them buying MySQL, meaning that MySQL is now something that an IT person responsible for IT can now say, okay, let's go
with Sun and let's go MySQL. They can buy Sun boxes and they can have their MySQL installed and it completely supported even more than when it was purely MySQL support. Mm. And MySQL is one of the examples that had a very good support already without a company like Sun behind it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, neat little Mac apps runs on MySQL.
Yeah, but I mean for
another nice example, Drupal. You can't go any more open source
I mean big bank companies. I know bank companies. Hi, Paul. I know bank companies who have run a lot of their front end.
Mail scams.
No, front
end. I'm sorry, front end stuff.
Front-end databases are purely MySQL. Back-end was Microsoft SQL, but they're changing that as well. To give another example, Sun has purchased VirtualBox, and for my listeners should know what VirtualBox is. It's like Parallels for your listeners.
Okay.
I can run VirtualBox on my OS X machine or on a Linux machine or a Windows machine, and have virtual boxes like you use Parallels.
Yeah. If he's mentioning some sort of open source software program, listeners, I mean neat little Mac apps listeners, just close your ears, put your fingers in, and then it all goes away.
Virtual boxes. Okay. Anyhow, Sun has bought VirtualBox as well. So they're trying to get a grip on database, they're trying to get a grip on virtualization, all via open source software. Well,
let's skip this one because the harvester is getting awfully
really
close now.
So we can drink.
Okay, so it's gone now. Really good beer, by the way. What I was wondering also, I mean, I have seen a huge boom, I mean really a huge boom in Mac software. And I'm talking about the typical software that I review, the neat little Mac apps. The smaller applications, they vary about 20 to 40, 50, sometimes 70 bucks. But they really do a lot of stuff and they do it really well, which is the reason I review them anyway. There will also be a humongous boom coming up with the iPhone. I mean, just think of some piece of software that exists now and then just think of a mobile version of it, some kind of stuff you can use it mobile. And I know that a lot of the developers, because they are already using the tools for their software they are creating right now, it's the same set of tools they can use to create mobile versions of stuff. So it's booming. That's one thing for sure. The only thing that I'm wondering is Apple has the advantage of being very monopolistic. No offense, but I mean, there is one mind pointing it into a specific direction. Even if you're a developer, you're writing some software which is totally different from what Apple is doing. The tools you use almost make it blend into the OS environment, Leopard, Tiger, whatever, because those are the tools and the interface will blend automatically. That's one of the problems I have sometimes with open source software, is that one, they don't really have, or I don't know of any existing features that make sure that what you are creating visually blends into the software or to the OS that it will run on, because there are a lot of different OS strings out there in the open source environment. How do developers do that in the open source world? Or is there no solution for them to make sure that there is some kind of homogeneous entity that makes everything look cool?
Yes, there are solutions. Like, for example, you have the GNOME and the KDE. And if I'm forgetting some other project that tries to get one environment with all the applications which blend in that environment, then I'm sorry, because GNOME and KDE try to do just that. They try to have one environment which where the software just blends in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really difficult to do because you have a lot of noses when working with open source software,
mm-hmm.
and it's not very easy to get them to point in the same direction.
Yeah.
It's really not easy. Whilst you have a company which is paying their developers to mm-hmm. look in the same direction as the board committee does,
yeah.
it's easier. But then again, a lot of people, a lot of my listeners in particular will go, well, okay, what stops a company which pays its developers to go open source? And that's a question to you. What stops Apple to go open source?
Well, parts of their operating systems, is open source.
No, that's not true. Give me one example that is open source from Apple.
Darwin. Everything they port in Darwin, they also give out.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay. It's an example, but then there it stops.
Yeah, but of course Apple still is a company about making money also.
Okay. So, and they can't make money from their hardware and give their operating system...
No, because I think their operating system is pushing the hardware, the sales of the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Look at, for instance, take the iPod.
Mm-hmm.
The huge boom in iPod use, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is also the way it is used. The interface,
mm-hmm.
the small, tiny OS that is in the iPod,
mm-hmm.
is the reason people buy iPods. It's a very easy to use thing. If they would open source that, then their advantage in that market is gone.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Apple still, I don't, you can be a Mac fan as much as you like, but if Steve Jobs or Apple, whatever, would have the power of Windows, they would be a much worse company than Microsoft is now.
Yes.
I mean, that's the way it is. Fact.
Yeah.
So
they would lose their competitive advantage.
I don't know. If they would make it open source, do you mean the way they make it? Or do you actually say, okay, what would they make open source?
Well, they could make
a GarageBand, the application?
No. Yeah, a lot of things. They could make...
Or Cocoa, the way they program. I mean, their program. Xcode, for instance.
They could... Well, Xcode is now just... It doesn't have to be open source. Xcode is a difficult example because it's an IDE, developer's environment. But to give an example, they could have two branches. They could have a company branch, which is completely closed, and they could have a open developer branch.
Don't they like that? Because the Safari browser is based on WebKit. Totally open source.
Okay, they use open source. They use open source
I think they port back stuff too.
I don't think so.
Yeah, we should check that out.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's difficult because here in the south of
France. We have no internet, we have nothing. We have a laptop, we have a... No harvester at this moment,
but it's temporary.
Yeah, it's temporary. So I can't check it now, but I don't think that Apple is contributing back enormously.
Oh, no, they're not.
What they are doing, they're not contributing. No.
They're just using it, sneaky little bastards.
And what they are doing is introducing, in my opinion, a lot of open source software to companies.
Perhaps. Might be. But that's...
That's for the server environment, not for...
You were talking about... Noses pointing in the same direction. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, what Apple is doing right with the open source they get in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
They are pointing it into one.
Yes.
They, I mean, don't get me wrong. I really love open source, the idea behind it. And I love the fact that I love the things people can create with open source. It really is. It's phenomenal. But it never is. It's like the very last bit. The very last implementation, it's like that always goes horribly wrong.
Mm.
It's like too much. I mean, my listeners know
desktop
this.
I'm really hard on
when it comes to bloatware.
Mm.
Too much features. I like an application to be small, to do what it needs to do, and that's it. And I think because of that huge amount of power in open source, that a developer or the thousands of developers that are working on one project tend to have how should I put it? They tend to put all the possible ways of doing something into that program. For instance, you can play an audio file. No. We can play 20,000 audio files and we can play them in this manner. And if you have an audio file, we can transpose it and put it in that.
I don't agree.
They throw in so much options that very often I find
I don't agree. Because the neat little Mac apps that you know exist as well in open source. If you look, you can find a lot of applications which do just the little thing you want them to do and nothing more than that.
Can I pick into that?
Yeah.
Okay. AmPlayer. Very nice example.
AmPlayer is not a neat little application.
Wait, that's it. Wait. Hold your horses.
I'm going to sip a bit of my beer. Because
you just did an episode on AmCoder and AmPlayer. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. AmPlayer, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but my neat little Mac apps audience know AmPlayer from one thing. The graphical interface that plays a lot of video files.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You open source users.
Which plays
users,
all video files.
Okay, wait. You open source users know AmPlayer because one, it plays
everything.
Mm-hmm. Two, you can transpose into everything.
Mm-hmm.
You can use terminal commands to do everything.
You have a gazillion graphical interfaces.
And that's where it goes wrong.
No, it doesn't.
It's great
for
an open... Yeah, I know. It's great for an open source guy. But for the man in the street to actually go and use it, it's like a cellular phone. They have a bazillion things to do and they use three.
Which is ideal. My godfather...
The one with the shaven beard who whacks off people?
No. Who lives here in France, at 10 kilometers from here, just saying hi. Salut, Papy Jack. He is 76. He has been working with Windows XP since he is 65. Then he discovered the computer. He's doing very well.
65.
Now he's 76.
Does XP exist that long?
No, he has been using Windows 90.
Okay,
yeah, Windows. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
And I visited him today. And he uses VideoLAN, VLC.
Sure, I do too. You know why?
It
plays everything.
Everything.
Yeah, but it has network streaming and all the things.
If you don't use it, why? What's your problem with it?
It's in there.
So that's good. If you need it, then it's in there.
One of the things, I mean, VLC, I could review it. I don't, because why? One of the things that I do when I'm reviewing applications, I open the preference window. There is a ton you can learn from the preference window.
True. Mm-hmm.
If I open the VLC preference window, I'm like, okay, there are 10 things there. I understand 2.5 of them.
Then you use something else, something open source that just plays video and has no big preferences window.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's bad. I just think that a lot of those open source things tend to throw too much in it. And sometimes it's better to reserve a bit, take a bit less options, but build a bit more on the interface and on the way, I mean...
Okay, but MPlayer is a... Not to get too far in this discussion with MPlayer, but still, MPlayer is a very nice example because I can just find on SourceForge a little wrapper, graphical wrapper on MPlayer that will do just that. Just give you the options to
and
play.
That's, okay, that wrapper, that's the final part that a lot of open source developers don't take. Because that makes MPlayer a possible neat little mock-up for me to review.
It is. Just review the wrapper.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But okay, MPlayer has lots of wrappers.
Okay. Take something else. I know.
There is lots of open source software that is really cool to use, but it doesn't have that way of showing me... Let's take this up. Another application, Audacity. We're using Audacity right now.
How does it feel?
Don't get me wrong. I know Audacity. I've recorded on it too. It's superb. Mm-hmm. If anyone would want to start a podcast, just take
Audacity.
It's free. It does what it has to do.
It doesn't crash.
It's great.
Yeah.
My problem? Why don't I use Audacity?
Yeah, why don't you?
I hate the interface.
It is a beautiful
interface.
It's a typical
open source interface.
Oh, come
knobs,
on.
Buttons, all kinds of buttons, all kinds of knobs.
It has
it's
just the buttons it needs.
Interface. I'm sorry. No, that's...
Audacity is a bad
example.
That's
the nicest example of a great, great open source project, great open source software, but somehow lacking the final steps to... And I understand why. I think that's the problem about open source. It runs on everything.
Mm-hmm.
That means that you can't make it look,
for instance,
just for OS X. Why not? Because it has to run on Ubuntu. It has to run on all those things. So in my opinion, the person that makes an open source piece of software that transposes open source software to the different environments, he nailed it. That would be a beautiful piece of software. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And you know that there exists a lot of those examples. For example,
I don't.
Yes, you do. Stellarium.
Yeah.
It exists on all operating systems.
Yes.
And it has been built specially for OS X as well. And it integrates beautifully with OS X.
Yeah, it does. But somehow there should be a piece of...
Frogs. Yeah.
Christ.
We're in France. Frogs.
Man. I mean, I'm looking for what would be great is there if there would be some sort of porting app that would port.
It's difficult because you have different operating systems, different window managers, different. It's just not feasible. The point is, and I think that it doesn't really have to do anything with open source.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Neat little mock apps can be open sourced as well. And your programmers who make those neat little closed mock apps can go open source as well and still have revenue. It has nothing to do with the operating system on which it runs.
Yeah, well, the look and feel does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. You
Yes,
you have the visual representations. You have, what's it called in Leopard?
Yes, but they can still open source it. There's nothing that stops them to open source their code.
I don't know. Because, for instance, you have you have a lot of applications that lean heavily on the graphical interface of OS X.
Yeah, but they still can open source.
No, because you don't have those interfaces. You don't have, for instance, you don't have QuickView. You don't have, what's it called? The animation, core animation.
They
like
can
that.
Still open source the software, especially for OS X, but not port it to Linux, FreeBSD,
that way.
Microsoft.
Yes.
There's nobody that says that if you make open source software, you have to port it to all possible operating systems.
No,
that's not
true. Okay.
They can still do it. That has nothing to do with open source software.
Yeah. No, that's true. You're right.
But in
why
general,
don't I see,
and I agree.
Why don't we see that?
Yeah. In general, I agree, most open source projects are specifically made for Unix-based machines.
No, but you're hitting a very good point there. Yeah. Why don't we see that?
Competitive advantage.
Ah.
That's one. If you open source a project, why would you pay for it? Because people can download it, compile it, and use it without paying.
Mm.
That's one.
Yeah.
The other one is, you have to manage an open
source. Compile it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, they can make it very easy. Mm-hmm. Compiling nowadays is nothing. If you port it, it's a package that you install on your machine. So it doesn't take any more time. It can even be ported to a nice installer app. So the fact is, some people would even make packages. Not even a developer, but some people who use it. So that's not the point. The point is, the developer would lose its competitive advantage.
Uh-huh.
They can't sell it because
you
can use it for free. The only thing he can sell is support.
Yeah.
And for little applications...
No, not going to happen. No, I understand that.
For server applications,
it's easier.
How come
the little applications in the open source world... Why does an open source developer who creates a little, how should we call it, neat little open source app?
Never mind.
They do that. Why do they do this and Mac app developers don't?
I have no clue at all. There are a lot of people who just code for the love of coding. There are a lot of people who code to demonstrate to the world that they can really make something well, it looks good on their resume. There are a lot of developers who are making something that they will be selling to companies who will be making big bucks out of it without close sourcing it, but giving, I don't know, banner ads on the side. They will sell it to telephone companies to use on mobile, stuff like that. But most of the open source projects are done completely, I think, voluntary based to prove, to show out of intellectual challenge that it can be done, that it is perfectly usable, and to share it with a lot of people. And I know that a lot of people won't agree. They will say, no, there are a lot of more reasons. And so please, and I'm just going to if you know why most developers develop open source.
Yeah, on the other hand, why Macintosh developers don't do this? I mean...
Yeah, mail at sourcetrunk@gmail.com and mail...
Oh, heavens. Feedback@neatlittlemacapps.com.
Just give us some
Feedback@neatlittlesourcetrunkapps.com. Something like that.
Okay. So it's very difficult to pinpoint why...
Strange, isn't it?
Yes, it's very strange.
Good discussion on that one. Why not?
Okay, let's open another beer, shall we? We're on a holiday.
I'm going to keep my pants dry now.
Yeah. I see how you're going to do that.
Yeah.
It's
a Marcus again, but this time a Blanche.
Which is a white beer.
Dishwash water.
Nah.
I'm sorry. Am I disrespectful for this beer?
Yes.
I mean, the Blanche I know in Belgium, there is one quite known beer.
The Hoegaarden, yeah.
Which is commonly referred to the dishwasher.
Yeah,
sorry.
Some people really like it. Some people really don't
like
it.
I like it when it's very, very hot and the beer is very, very cold.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
so it's very hot and the beer is very cold. So
yeah, but this is a Blanche.
You're watching your trousers, which is good.
I'm going to watch my trousers.
Okay. Give me the...
Okay,
Watch the bottle. Okay, one trick if you don't want beer or champagne or anything that can keep the glass next to the microphone, very good. You're learning quickly.
Hey.
One trick to not have foam getting out of the glass too soon is to keep the head in your hand. Just keep a firm grip on the head of the bottle and it won't spill.
You're joking, right?
No, it's true. Ask any physicist.
I'm going to laugh if this goes bad.
Oh. Well, it shouldn't.
So much for physics.
It shouldn't. Okay, anyway, I'm drinking a blonde. Just a blonde Marcus. And then we had all four of the Marcus beers.
Oh man, this isn't at all what I thought it would be.
Is it good?
It's a bit soury.
Yeah, that's not white bad. Beer. Yeah,
yeah, I know, but soury, but without really bitter taste.
Good.
Soury, sweet. No, it's difficult. I'm really bad at this.
And the blonde is very, very nice, but it has bits and pieces in it, and I always...
Oh, this white beer too. Definitely, bits and pieces.
So...
That's fermentation, right?
That's fermentation, so don't drink it completely till the end, otherwise you'll feel a bit nauseated tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Okay. Round two. Privacy.
There are rounds?
Yes.
Who won the first
one? That's the last one.
If I knew there were rounds, I would have... Now he's telling me.
Okay. Privacy.
Privacy?
Yes.
What about
privacy
that?
Has a lot to do with open source software. Mm-hmm. The same example. My godfather uses Windows XP, and he asks me, should I use Microsoft Defender or not? And the only thing I could tell him was, why shouldn't you? He says, well, apparently Microsoft Defender sends a lot of information to Microsoft about the usage of your computer. And the only thing I could say was, you might as well, because Microsoft knows already everything you do with your computer.
Oh, I have something to add to that.
Okay.
These days, a lot of developers tend to put in their software. Mm-hmm. Of course, they phone home, logically.
They phone home.
For reasons of serials and stuff like that. I understand
cool.
that.
Yeah.
But a lot of the software developers now put in a little checkbox in which they ask you to send them information on your usage of the application.
Which in open source projects happens a lot too.
Too.
Yeah.
Because I
statistics.
Always check it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's...
Oh, skip because Harvester is coming.
And... The reason I check that is because I really want to help the developer. In each episode I do, I give the developer a tip. Even if they sponsor a show, it doesn't really matter. I only review the applications I like. But nevertheless, there are always things that I find could improve. And to help the developer develop his apps to make them better, they put something in there that can help them, so I just check it. Is that invading my privacy? I don't think so, because a lot of them, they always have clear lineouts telling us, okay, I only take this and this and this types of samples. This is the information that you're going to send me. And it's a trust relationship. And one reason or another, I trust them. With that info.
And you have, okay, that's a trust relationship, but you don't have any, because it is a trust relationship, you have no means of checking.
I think the advantage here is that it's still a smaller community. So if that developer would take advantage of the info he gets, because it's such a small community, mm-hmm. he'd never be able to get in it again.
But that is for... little applications, that is for
neat little Mac apps cases.
But
not talking Photoshop here.
If you go for the bigger applications, for the more known applications, you have to admit that the closed source applications, you can't really trust what is going on with your information.
Oh, heavens no.
No.
God knows what Photoshop is sending back.
For example.
Using the computer right now is using blue socks. Definitely, blue socks.
And he has uploaded 20 pictures of his grandparents.
Definitely, grandparents.
Yeah, grandparents. Okay.
Algorithmically.
The thing is, with open source software, you have 100 eyes looking at the code itself, looking what is going on there, what is the developer getting out of the box, and it's completely clean most of the time. If it isn't clean, somebody will find out that there's something going wrong. And you don't have that in closed source applications.
You don't have it anywhere else.
Explain.
That only exists in open source.
Yes, you have open source bread.
Have
open sourced coffee. You have open sourced beer. No, I'm serious. Where you have the recipe. So yeah, you can know, see what it is made of.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, that, in my opinion, goes to, I mean, if that's the case, and if you really want that, fine by me, but that means that 90% of the software out there is not monitored. I mean, everything that's, almost everything that's running on Windows right now is not monitored.
Yes, that's true.
That's what you're saying.
And that's what, yes, and that's why so, I hate.
Yeah, I understand using... that. That's why one would hate to use that. But on the other hand, if 90% of the software out there already is invading one way or another privacy, why bother with the 10% left?
So we have lost the war, so why would we bother? Why would we go any further? No, that's no, I disagree on this one.
No, I mean, if I can, when it comes down to non-proven cases, I mean, that doesn't mean we don't have to look for it. That doesn't mean it's good to have pioneers in the field who do check what a certain program is sending out. And that's not that difficult to do.
No, but therefore...
checking what a program is sending out.
No, therefore it has to be open source, because when it is closed source, you can encrypt everything you're sending back home.
Okay, wait, whoa. If... just take Little Snitch on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if... some kind of program would send something out, not on port 80, but on some specific port, whatever. And, okay, can be on port 80.
Yeah, it will be on port 80. Yeah. Normally, practical reasons.
Yeah. I don't know.
It will be on port 80 for practical reasons. There are no firewalls that block port 80.
I know, but...
nobody will check. If you check, you see traffic going to a web server of the company.
My which idea makes is like if 20,000 people are using Adium, which is open source by the way, and they would see traffic going out without making a Skype or without making a chat session.
Yeah. No, it's the other way around. They would look at the source code. They would go check the source code. What is going on in the code?
Yeah, but isn't it a lot more easier to just check what's going out and see, hey, I'm not doing anything. Why is it sending data?
No, that's
what's the data it's sending?
No, it's reverse engineering. Then you have to really trial and error see what is going on, while you can just directly go to the code, look in the code, and see what it does. Which information is it getting?
Yeah, but now you're saying that everyone that are using open source is a programmer.
No, I'm just saying that 2 or 1% of the people who use the programs, who use a program, is a developer, and they work, contribute, or just check the code to see what it does.
How many of those developers actually do that?
A lot of them.
Really?
Yes.
I mean,
they're purists.
Aren't there any cases of open source software that have some strange stuff in it that only get figured out 5 years after?
Yes.
So.
So
it's still a really trust
relationship. Okay, but that's the exception. That's not the general rule.
Yeah, but the exception on a community that practically barfs out software all the time.
No.
It's still a large portion.
Yeah, well, the software that won't get detected in doing something malicious on your computer is most of the time not really used at all by a large scale of people.
Okay. I get that.
If there is a large scale of people using the software, you really have to be you can be certain of it that it will be checked by developers.
No, okay.
Developers and open source developers are really purists. They're like people who use math for fun, for kicks.
Okay.
They want to know what is going on.
That might explain the strange graphical user interface.
Yes. I grant you that.
I don't care if there's this button or that button. As long as when I push it, it does this algorithm.
Okay.
After that one, and then takes that and throws it around and reverses it and then puts it back in and gets it back out. And
granted.
Puts it back in granted. And gets it back out.
Luckily, a lot of...
puts it back in again.
A lot of graphical artists are getting into the open source development wave as well. And are helping out.
So, because, just for the record, I had... kind of like this discussion with Christopher Forsythe, who developed Adium.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him kind of like the same question, like, why is open source software so ugly?
Okay, I've lost 20% again.
Okay, well, bye. I'm sorry, I'm just a Mac head, so don't pay attention to me. It's strange. But if I can just ask you one more question. Considering open source software, what is the very next thing that you would like to happen in the open source software? Which piece of software would you like to see? What is, in your opinion, in that environment, what would interest you most that would happen in the coming year? For instance, is there something you're looking out for? Is there an open source iPhone equivalent?
That was not a question. That was a trap.
Okay, yeah. Well, okay, never mind the iPhone. Yeah. Just what would you like to see?
Okay, just to get on the iPhone bit.
No, it doesn't have to be.
Just to get on the iPhone bit, you know that Android is coming. And
never heard of it. Don't know what it is.
It will probably not be the iPhone killer, but it is supported by a huge organization, so maybe it will do something for the open source community.
Would you buy a phone that would run Android? Would you?
No, I wouldn't, because it's owned by Google. So that's a whole lot of discussion, and we really have to skip that one. But what would I like to see in the open source community happening now? What would I like to see as software? I think everything is there.
Oh, no, I'm not kidding.
It last year, I wouldn't have said that, because there was one thing that was really, really missing.
What was that?
That was a digital assets management system.
And what did you find?
And I found... Why are you snickering?
I mean, I'm kind of like...
I found Alfresco. And Alfresco is really...
What's that?
Well, I'll talk about
Italian
it in
ice cream.
I'll talk about it in one of the reviews. Oh. So that was the only thing that was missing, and it's there.
Was it Mac OS X version?
Why would you want it? It's browser based. It's a service system.
Yeesh.
It's an asset management system.
It's ugly.
No, it's beautiful.
Okay.
I'll show you one day. Okay, but anyway, no. I can't think of any application that isn't open sourced that I would want to see in the open source community.
Okay,
fair enough. I can work completely 100% open sourced if I didn't have this MacBook Pro for my company.
Yeah, okay.
I work completely 100% open sourced on my Debian machine.
Nice.
I have everything.
Is there something you would like to see brought out in the open source community to help your wife deal with her PC system? I'm sorry.
She works with a Ubuntu
machine.
Of course.
No,
completely open source.
Yeah. Okay.
She doesn't.
Okay.
She uses OpenOffice.
Sorry, I even asked.
You're sorry you've asked. Because I'm going on and on now.
Okay, darn.
She swaps.
Very nice beer, isn't it? I really love the Blanche, really.
We completely.
Taste yours. I mean, really.
So, no, I'm not missing anything.
Okay. Please
call. Not anything.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You're proud of me, aren't you?
Yeah.
And I have a question for you. Wouldn't you like to have 100 or 1,000 developers, completely voluntary based, look in some Apple applications and just improve things?
No.
Because with the noses in one direction?
Yes and no. I mean, the applications I review are most of the time one man.
Yeah.
He decides. Mm-hmm. He takes in the listener feedback. The user feedback.
Yeah.
He changes his code.
Yeah.
His app.
Fair enough. And he makes money out of it.
Makes money out of it.
It's living. It supports it.
Well, tries to make a living out of it. Okay. And if enough people go like, I really want this in your application. Mm-hmm. He has the flexibility to just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Poof. And it's there. No, it's not poof like it's there. It's a lot of work. And I think you can have that in open source. But just imagine 1,000 people working on one application. 2,000 people, those 1,000 developers and 1,000 users trying to get some kind of one new feature they want definitely to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
How would that go?
Very easily, one developer would implement it. He would provide source code.
Yeah, but he would implement it in his way, and then other developers would go like, no, we have to, no, that's
and
wrong.
They would change it.
And they would change it. And another developer would
and
go, no,
one
I would,
project leader
okay.
who will say.
And how long would that take for the final version of that feature to appear?
In my opinion.
In a definite state of, okay, this is the new feature.
Okay, it would take longer. If it would be a project that is maintained by a lot of coders, that is contributed by a lot of coders, but if it is an open source project that is mainly built by one coder,
I have the same principle.
Yeah, the same principle.
Yeah,
it just changes it on the fly.
Mm-hmm. So, that's the same.
It's the same.
Like it's now. So, mm-hmm. I could go like, what would you? Well, you would prefer 1,000 developers looking at the code of one application.
Yeah, and one developer...
Managing it all. Oh, poor sod.
Yeah. No, I mean, one developer can still completely control his code if it doesn't fork it to another project. And he still can say, well, I'm going to be completely
selfish and do
selfish about it, and I'm going to do this. And other people could say, okay, we just can suggest it that you would do it this way. And he could learn from it, but still do it his way.
Yeah. So you could still have that kind of... Yeah. Well, okay.
Anyhow.
Well, I think we'd better just enjoy our beer here. Wrap this up for the listeners out there. I hope you enjoyed this little discussion.
I enjoyed this discussion. I don't know if the listeners did, but I enjoyed it.
That's the beauty of a podcast.
And that's the beauty of a holiday.
Yeah. So I hope the people out there have a nice holiday too, or if you're at work. Hope you had a nice commute listening to this ramshackle podcast of people just throwing their ideas out there. Where can they reach you?
They can reach me at sourcestrong.com. They can leave comments, and they can mail me directly via sourcestrong@gmail.com, which I haven't changed, but I will be doing soon.
Change?
The gmail.com. I want to get rid of the Gmail.
Oh,
stuff.
You're going to use domain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice one. Okay. Well, if people want to get a hold on me, you can just follow me on Twitter, which is
Twitter/NLMA.
I'm twittering. No, I'm not twittering. I'm in the south of France. What would you think? There is no.
That's why you're trying to find hotspots in.
Whatever. God.
Driving around like a lunatic. Yeah.
Anyway,
farmers here. They don't have hotspots.
Oh, okay, you never know. Okay. Anyway, twitter.com/NLMA, or you can just mail me at feedback@neatlittlemacapps.com. This kind of like also made me think of some interviews I did on the System Trash episodes we did earlier. So, listeners on Neat Little Macapps, you can expect some interviews I did in the era of System Trash, and those are interviews of Leo Laporte and stuff like that. I'll be throwing them in the feed later on, so you can enjoy those as well. So I'm going to enjoy this beer now. Sorry about that, but
especially for this episode, thanks for your time and good hunting.
Bye. Music for Neat Little Macapps is provided by the BC Surfers. Track name is Julu Beats, and you can find out more about them at music.podshow.com.